Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished professional from Amsterdam in the Netherlands, Zoe Papaeconomou. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Zoe is an investigative journalist, and she's the co-author of a book titled Inclusion Marathon. Her work is focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. So Zoe, before we talk DEI, tell me about your own journey in brief.
That's always a good question to start with. So I grew up actually in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam. I grew up in a bicultural family. My mother is Dutch and my father is Greek. Mm-hmm. And my father migrated to the Netherlands and then met my mother. So I grew up in Amsterdam from the age of three. My parents were already separated at that point. And I think the reason why eventually I became a DEI professional is because what you see a lot with people who work in this area, they had some own experience with exclusion.
Right.
Yeah. So growing up as a bicultural person in the Netherlands, I had some experiences with exclusion. Also growing up in welfare, we were with a single parent. People have a lot of strong opinions about that in the Netherlands as well. Mm-hmm. Even although we are a social welfare state.
Right.
But it was also what I was seeing around me, happening around me, that had a strong influences on my experiences, but also on my wish to become a journalist, because mm-hmm. I was quite idealistic. I thought then I will become a journalist and tell the stories that nobody is telling yet, or from different perspectives and what I'm experiencing myself or other people are experiencing. But when I became a journalist, after my studies of history and Arabic language, I started at the local television station, Amsterdam Television. I was even more affronted and surprised of the lack of diversity and inclusion within mm-hmm. mass media wow. in the Netherlands. Yeah.
Wow. That's quite amazing. I mean, you know, you give me two amazing instances of one, a single parent, and second, mass media. But tell me, Zoe, based on all the work that you have done in the area of diversity, equity, inclusion, what are some common misconceptions people have about DEI?
Well, when I give training sessions or lectures at companies, I always start with explaining diversity, because what I see is that people think that diversity is not about them, but about somebody else. So they think it's about, you know, getting more women in top positions, or getting more bicultural or black people inside of the company. Mm-hmm. And this is also part of it. Don't get me wrong, representation is very important, but diversity is about all of us. It's about mutual differences. And in my work, I'm also focused on power structures and the mechanisms of power within this field. Mm-hmm. Because what you see, if you look at diversity only as something that has to do with the other, there's an immediate power construct in that, because then the sitting population, the dominant group, is going to help you to get in, and then they can just choose if they feel it's their responsibility or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that is something that I see a lot, that people think that it's about the other and they want to help them to become the same. And that's the other thing. That's why equity is so important. And before our book, The Inclusion Marathon, people weren't really speaking about equity yet in the Netherlands.
Right.
So we really made a point of that concept, because the sameness is also something that is very inequitable, mm-hmm. because we are not the same. Mm-hmm. We are different, but not every difference is worth the same. And that is something that is a big difference.
Very well said. But, you know, when you speak at so many different conferences about DEI, how do you handle resistance or criticism when you talk about a controversial topic, and I'm using a strong word, controversial topic like DEI? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to whom DEI is controversial. It's normally the sitting population, and or you know the and if you talk in society terms, we are still a white patriarchal system. So people who are within the norm feel more controversy when you're talking about DEI. For me, DEI is basically anti-discrimination work. That's the base of it. That's where equity for me it's about.
Very well said.
And that is something people find difficult if they do not experience it themselves. So it's a very good question because I think I'm also a resistance expert by now. Because I speak at conferences as well, but a lot mostly in organizations, in teams, and in companies. And at first, I could be, you know, I was a bit insecure, and people would just like, well, shouting is a big word, also happened, but people could become very angry. And now I think I found a way to talk about this topic a little bit more that it resonates with more people. So that's why I talk a lot about power. And a more, I think, known word is privilege. But I think privilege gives you power. So, and I take it a little bit, I broaden it a little bit. So I talk about, for example, power in the room, who can get into the room or cannot get into the room, but also power in characteristics. Are you introvert, extrovert? Power in society, power in your body. Are you male, female, white, etc.? And I try to make it a common responsibility. So I feel this resonates a little bit more because, unfortunately, in the Netherlands, I don't know if it's the same with you, but if you say diversity and inclusion, like half of the people will go, no. But to make it a little bit more about themselves. And of course, also, so the funny thing is sometimes people ask me when they ask me to come to give a training, they ask me, well, can you keep it light and funny? That's what they ask. And then I always say, well, then you have to hire a clown and do something with that. But in all honesty, I do not keep it light. I make it quite uncomfortable, but we do laugh a lot because I do feel that humor can help to lighten the atmosphere a bit. But I don't want people to make, if everybody is happy afterwards, I'm not sure I've done my job, right?
Very true, very true, very true. So tell me, over the years, in your opinion, how has the DEI landscape changed and evolved in the Netherlands?
That's a good question. So what I see is that so I'm now 42, still very, very young, of course.
Absolutely, I'm 67.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's also still very, very young. But I started when I was in my early 20s, so I'm almost 20 year working in this field or researching this field. And what you saw at the beginning, also when I began, people were really questioning diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like it didn't have a right to be or something. And what you, I think, big things that happened, like for example, the Corona crisis and also Black Lives Matters, like big societal changes, really helped our field, because now you see in the Netherlands that people do not question the necessity anymore. I mean, don't get me, I mean, you may have seen on the news that we have a very extreme right party that has won the elections in the Netherlands. So this is a quite recent development. And they, of course, do question everything. They're very Islamophobic. They question racism, they question discrimination. So that's very difficult. And we have to see how this evolves. But in general, I do see that people are now working a little bit more on the how, instead of that you have to convince everybody all the time that this is important. So this is the optimistic view. On the other hand, I have to say the whole how thing is taking a long time as well, because I feel that people still feel that they find it difficult to be self-reflective and to change. They still are still looking at it a little bit like you. People can come in, but they have to behave the same as we are doing.
Very well said. Great response. Thank you. My next question is that how can individuals in organizations contribute to creating a more inclusive environment, and where does accountability lie?
Well, I think accountability lies in several layers. So you have, of course, I mean, the most important one, but also the most difficult one is the system. So how is the organization built up? But it's also resting on the system of society. So this is a very slow process, and I'm not to be disheartening, because I do feel you can change that. A very interesting person we interviewed in our book, The Inclusion Marathon, is Astrid Elberg. And she's a leadership expert, amongst other things. And she said very rightly, I think, that this responsibility also lies, especially the society system, with activists, with politicians, with legal professionals. This is a very big responsibility for an individual person to change. But to give you an inspiring example for how it can work, and then I'm talking about, if that's okay,
Yeah, please.
about society change. I don't know if you're familiar with a Dutch tradition which is called Sinterklaas.
No.
No, it's like a Santa Claus, but then we also have Santa Claus, but this is like a spin-off, or how do you want to call it? And it's also maybe Sinterklaas, the person, not itself, but he had helpers who were, the story was that they came into the chimney,
Chimney.
and that's why they had a little bit of
The suit.
black stripes on their face. But it's a tradition that stems from slavery, and it was just blackface, to be honest. So but a long time, there were definitely also black Dutch people that were very much against that, rightfully so, but there wasn't a lot of attention for it. And the Netherlands is also known of what they called polderen, like talking about everything and everything, and just talking, 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 but not changing everything. So, and then around 15, 10 to 15 years ago, there was this group of activists called Kick Out Zwarte Piet. This helper is called Zwarte Piet, Black Piet. And because they refused to talk and were demonstrating at certain times when Sinterklaas came to the Netherlands, Sinterklaas, I mean, he's not real, of course. They really changed opinion about it. And first, they had experienced a lot of aggression, being attacked. People were really angry, talking about, yeah, but it's tradition, it's not racism, which is not true. It is blunt racism. But because they refused in the beginning, I mean, they went to schools, they talked with everybody, but they refused to back down. And now you see within 10 years that the entire tradition has changed. So it's a bit of a longer answer to how systemic change works. And then I think it means, so this is, you can definitely do it as an activist, but if you work in a company, you're in a different environment. So what is your accountability as an individual? Because I do feel this is also important, because if we make it too big, nobody feels responsible. Because another big part of accountability is also leadership, for example, within a company. But if you talk about the individual, it depends, of course, also what your privileges are, your own powers. But I do believe it's very important that you research your own powers and privileges. And to give a small example, for example, I'm quite extrovert. In the Netherlands, we really appreciate that. So that gives me power, because the way I behave, it comes easy to me. I can connect easy with people. I'm not afraid to talk, as you now know, have noticed as well. So that leaves the responsibility to me to also make room for other people that are less extrovert. I have a coworker which I work a lot with, for example. She's very introvert. And I can say to her all the time, well, just interrupt me if you want. Or I can just shut up one for once
Well
and
said.
give her some space. So this is a very small,
Yeah,
yeah.
no, well said, well
And this
said.
goes. But the more difficult things are, for example, what is your whiteness doing in the space, for example? It also gives you power. What is your masculinity doing in the space? It also gives you power. And that is more difficult because nobody has chosen to be born as they are. And it's sometimes difficult because people feel that they have all worked hard to be somewhere. But I do feel that it's also, is it that it's very important to think when it's, is it my responsibility to maybe share the room? And I think, to conclude my very long answer, it's important to, as an individual, you are accountable. You are also part of the system. You're part of the team. So you're always accountable if you are not working together with other individuals, not sharing your powers, not creating a space for people to be themselves. You are also part of that.
Very well said. Thank you. Great response. And why I asked you the question of accountability also was because I was speaking to a very senior CEO of a company and I asked him the same question. And he said, well, the board has formulated the policy. Now it is the CHRO's responsibility. So I think that was an interesting response he gave me. But moving on, I'd like to talk to you about your book, The Inclusion Marathon. I love the title. Inclusion is very important, but you refer to it as a marathon. Tell me about your book and some key insights.
Yes. Well, maybe it's good also to explain why we chose this title. At one point, we read Kauthar Bushalict, my co-author and me. We read an interesting article of Janice Kassam Asare. She's an American diversity professional and journalist. And she compared inclusion with a muscle. And she said, well, if you don't train it, it becomes weak. And I think that still a lot of people, and especially within companies, are looking for like a shortcut. They want like a 7-step plan and then it's finished. And I don't think, I mean, we should have maybe called it the endless inclusion marathon because I don't think it's ever finished because it's about exclusion in the end. And there will be always, there are always different groups that, and people that are excluded. So it will be always relevant to really look at it in a different way. And our HR is not filling that gap, human resources. So this is a specific way of looking to organizational structure and team culture. So I said it a little bit before already, is that the term equity, which is we chose gelijkwaardigheid in Dutch, wasn't something we were really talking about when we were talking about diversity and inclusion. Few people, but not in the broader sense. So that was something that, because what we did basically in our book, we interviewed diversity professionals. So people who work in companies to try to make it more diverse and inclusive. And we ask them, what are the things you encounter? What helps you? What prevents you from doing your work? And what they said was, what prevents us is power abuse and discrimination, toxic behavior. And this is something that inclusion sometimes doesn't, inclusion in the Netherlands mostly is talk about being yourself and celebrating our differences. And you hear a little bit of cynicism. Of course, that's awesome. But celebrating your differences while you're also experiencing discrimination, I mean, it's difficult. So that's why we said, so it was really from their experience that we said we need this term, not to make it like a party of terms, but to really focus on what is not on exclusion and what is not going well within organizations, the barriers of people to move on. And I mean, I am really happy to say that it's now adopted very widely in the Netherlands, this term. So we are very thankful that we could,
Make a
that our
difference.
book helped to really invest that term in a broader public and in institutions.
Fascinating. And is this book in English or Dutch?
There's an abridged version in English, so it's not one to one, but the key insights is now bundled in the Inclusion Marathon. Yes,
Okay,
and it's
wonderful.
widely available.
Wonderful. Thank you. So I have time for two or three more questions. My next question to you is based on all the work that you are doing, how can we as a society remove our biases when it comes to DEI?
Ooh, big question. Big question. I mean, DEI is also very context context driven. I mean, if we would have a little bit more time, I would be very curious how there's DEI is talked about in India, for example, because I feel it's very different in different countries, even in different cities.
Absolutely.
And you have different forms of exclusion everywhere. I feel that, but let me focus on the Dutch example because that's what I know best. I think it's also we need to practice talking about these kind of topics, and especially in the Netherlands, that's difficult, and that's because of our colonial history. So we have a strong colonial history and a strong history of thinking of ourselves as a very tolerant, forward, liberal nation, which is, I mean, it's partly true, but for a large part, we were a very horrible colonial power. We destroyed a lot in the world. It's until recently, the history of slavery and colonialism was just a small part in our history books, in our school systems. That's fortunately changing now. But that makes it particularly difficult in the Netherlands to talk about racism, for example, because we feel we are not racist because we were against apartheid in South Africa and at the forefront of it. So we have this image of ourselves as Dutch people that we are so tolerant. And if you are not at the, let's say, at the exclusion side of our system, you don't experience exclusion. So, right, we're so tolerant. Everybody's welcome. But they have to behave exactly the same. That's the other hand. So I think we need more practice. And that's also a new project I'm working on. And how do we talk about these kind of topics without freaking out immediately? We have a lot of difficulty, for example, in the Netherlands using the term racism. I call it sometimes, to make fun of it, the R word. Like, it's people are like, oh, but racism, we don't know. The judge has to decide if it's racism. Well, a lot of examples are very clear. And also discrimination, we have very difficulty with talking about pain, with healing, with trauma, because we have such a great self-image. So I think this is something we need to practice. And a new book I'm working on together with a few other people is about courageous conversations or uncomfortable conversations. This is also a little bit of a hype. I don't want, we are also talking about power differences within that. But I feel that this is very necessary for our society.
Very interesting. So, time for one more question. And this question is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation around the world. Zoe, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of our young viewers and listeners to take away from your learnings on the topic of DEI?
Well, maybe to start off with is that diversity, or let me, no, I will rephrase that. To start off with, I think DEI work is a responsibility of all of us. So everybody who is listening, it's also your responsibility. We have different responsibilities in it, of course, because that also depends on what kind of privilege or power you have.
Correct.
And I think that's also something that is that's something you can do yourself is research what kind of powers do you have? For example, if you are able-bodied, that means that you can go everywhere. you can go in everywhere. So maybe you can also do something and make sure that if you organize something for a broader public, that you make sure that everybody can get in, or subtitle your videos, for example, if so that people who are blind can also, no, that's the other way around,
People who are deaf, yeah.
who are deaf can also read it, etc., etc. So think about your own powers and see how you can make a little bit more room for others. And then maybe as the third one, I would definitely recommend to start small. I mean, it's you can also, of course, I think it's always good to also become an activist if you have the financial and headspace for that, also depending on your own privileges. But you can always start in your own small environment, your children's school, your own school. What are maybe things you can change over there? And especially if you have experienced different forms of exclusion yourself, that doesn't mean you understand every form of exclusion, for example. So maybe also learn a little bit more about different forms of exclusion and see how you can be an ally to them.
Very interesting. And on that note, Zoe, and your three wonderful lessons. First one is so important, which is DEI is for everyone. You know, it is everyone's responsibility. Second, I just love which you said, and I love the way you have related inclusion to the kind of power that each one of us has. So you're saying, I try and understand what kind of power you have and make room for others in this area of your power. And the third one you said was start small, and if you have the ability, become an activist. Thank you, Zoe, for speaking to me about your journey. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And thank you for speaking to me about your book, The Inclusion Marathon. All the very best for your new book that's coming out. Hopefully, when you issue your book, release your book, we'll have another conversation. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.